Hey there, mama. You're listening to the Lift the Shame podcast. I'm your host, Crystal, mama of five and your family's intuitive eating dietitian, here to help you cut through the diet culture clutter so you can enjoy freedom with food as a family. I'm on a mission to help you end the generational legacy of diet culture in your home so you can experience motherhood free from food guilt and body shame. Listen in weekly for guidance on how you can ditch diet culture, heal your relationship with food in your body, and confidently raise intuitive eaters. Let's dive in and lift the shame together. Welcome back to the show, Mama. I'm so glad that you're here. We are actually continuing our mini series on kids and sweets this month. So we're going to dive right into this important question and topic that I hear a lot. And I think it's really important to cover to help clear up any confusion or misunderstanding when it comes to sweets and making sweets part of our child's life. And that is this whole idea of sugar being addictive. And this is a red hot button. I know I've definitely heard a lot of controversy around this. And so I thought it would be important to take some time to clear up some of that controversy so that you can feel more confident when it comes to navigating sweets with your child. And last week, we talked about this concept of breaking out of those rigid rules when it comes to sweets and offering sweets to our kids. So I hope that was helpful. If you didn't get a chance to listen, make sure you go back and listen to our episode on having candy for breakfast. And I want to continue on this topic. For one, it is Halloween at the end of the month. And whether or not you celebrate it, you may be aware that there's just generally a higher influx of sweets and candy available in the stores. You might see it with your kids at parties or in school and different occasions that they're coming across. And this is why I think it's so important to normalize sweets, because the world in which we live in includes sweets in all their different forms. And we don't want our kids to not know how to self-regulate them. And ultimately, the goal of raising an intuitive eater is raising a child who is competent in navigating a variety of different eating situations. And we talked a lot about this in previous episodes, but you know, again, there's this idea as parents that we can gatekeep and control everything that our kids are eating. And there's a lot to unpack there, like this idea of being in control as a parent. Now, you're in charge as a parent, but we don't want to micromanage our kids and what they're eating or be a food police when it comes to what our kids are eating and their appetites, because that can really cause them to disconnect from their innate intuitive eating abilities. And so I'm hopeful that this month, through this mini series, we can continue to support you in feeling confident in introducing sweets and offering them and normalizing them in your home so that sugar is not something that you fear and sweets are something that your kids are able to self-regulate. Oftentimes, when candy-centered holidays or special occasions, like Halloween, for example, come up, that's often when I tend to see power struggles kind of resurface for parents and kids, especially around sweets. And so I really want to help you so that you don't get sucked in into those power struggles, because really it's those power struggles that suck away the joy that should be part of eating. And ultimately, again, we want our kids to feel confident in navigating all kinds of different eating scenarios, whether it's a Halloween party or trick-or-treating or just an everyday occasion where you may have sweets in your home. You know, I like to always look and paint this picture of what we're working towards. And I think that's really important to keep in mind when it comes to raising intuitive eaters, because it's really easy to get sucked into the minutiae of what our kids are eating at every single meal. And we kind of keep this arbitrary checklist in our heads, like, did they eat vegetables? Did they eat fruit? Are they eating, you know, minimal amounts of processed foods or sugar or sweets? Instead, I want to encourage you to think about the bigger picture of what you're working towards in raising an intuitive eater. Like, you want your child to grow up and be confident in in their bodies and really be so in tune with their bodies that they can trust their bodies as the best expert of what they need and not have to fall into rigid rules about food or be at constant war with their bodies or what they're eating or how much they're eating. Like, their bodies can help them navigate that. And in order to support them in getting to that place, we have to be able to allow them to experiment with different kinds of foods in the safety and context of our own home while they're growing up. So I say that just to kind of paint the background here of the bigger picture, because again, when it comes to a topic like sugar, it's easier to feel like, I don't really want to deal with that, so let's just not bring it in the house, or I don't feel comfortable dealing with that, let's just try to avoid it. And both of those things are valid concerns, and I want to help you, again, like, work through some of those obstacles in order to better support your kids in navigating all kinds of different eating scenarios and learning how to trust their bodies and their innate intuitive eating abilities. So back to our topic for today, is sugar addictive? This is something that I hear come up a lot and something that I hear diet culture using in terms of reasoning to prevent kids from having access to sweets, where sugar is labeled as toxic, as poison, as, again, addictive. And I think when parents hear this message, it creates a lot of fear. It creates a lot of concern. Like, am I doing the right thing by letting my child eat something that's potentially addictive? Like, what does that do? And what kind of messages are we internalizing as parents when we're hearing sugar being painted in this light? So I really want to dig into some of the science behind this, because I really think just being informed about how sugar breaks down in our bodies and what's actually happening when we're eating sweets and things like that, I think knowing some of those things can really help dissipate the fear that's surrounded around sugar. You know, there's a lot of fear, a lot of angst, and when we are feeding our kids from a place of fear, we're more likely to be controlling and restrictive and engage in feeding practices that are going to be detrimental to our child and to their intuitive eating abilities. So let's unpack this. I know there's a lot to cover around here, so I'm going to do my best to try to cover this as concisely as possible. But first, I want to address what an addiction is actually defined as, because when we talk about sugar being addictive, I think a lot of it is being described in this way. So an addiction is actually defined as a psychological and physical inability to stop consuming a chemical, drug, activity, or substance, even though it is causing psychological and physical harm. Okay, so that's just a standard definition. So in this frame of reference, can sugar qualify as a substance that kids may have a psychological or physical inability to stop consuming? And I've actually worked with many families about this who have come to me because that was the understanding that they had about their child, like telling me that my child just literally cannot stop eating sweets. Whenever sweets are available, if we go to a birthday party, if we go to a special occasion or a special outing and there's sweets available, my kid will only care about the sweets. They will not engage in any of the other activities that are there, and they cannot stop eating the sweets. When kids are engaging in those types of behaviors around sweets, it really can seem to fall into this category, this definition of what addiction is. Something that a child is unable to stop consuming, even though it may be causing psychological or physical harm. So even if a child may be eating past the point of fullness or feeling sick because they've eaten so much, they may not be able to stop. Many would argue that sugar can fall into this category, just like other substances that can be abused or that someone can become addicted to. And I've heard things said like sugar is addictive as cocaine. And that's a pretty far stretch, right? Like saying that this idea that sugar has the same toxic effect on the brain and body as someone who might be addicted to illegal drugs. This is a really big stretch. But again, I don't want to minimize or dismiss the feelings that parents might have when they observe these types of behaviors in their children, right? And yeah, like when you see your child engaging with sweets in that manner where the way that they're eating seems uncontrollable, or they won't stop, or they're not clearly not listening to their body because they're just kind of gorging themselves on whatever sweets are available, or perhaps they're unable to engage in other activities in their life because they're so consumed by eating sweets. All of those things can be really difficult to observe in a child and very stressful. And it could leave a parent to assume that my child must be addicted to sweets because of their behaviors around them. And this is where I just want to encourage you, if you're dealing with this, or if perhaps you've seen this behavior in children in your life in some capacity, I just want to hold space for you. This behavior in kids can be very challenging to witness. It's often the reaction and the response to those behaviors that can intensify what we see often categorized as a sugar addiction. And I think also, like, it can be helpful to look at what diet culture is saying about sugar as well, because when sugar and processed foods are demonized and parents are already feeling guilt or shame when their kids want to eat those things, there's already some restraint around sweets to begin with. So because sweets are vilified and sugar is vilified, there's already this notion that sweets should be controlled, they should be limited, don't provide a lot of access. And oftentimes in these situations where kids are eating sweets in an uncontrollable manner, if we look at the bigger picture of how sweets are integrated in their life in general, they tend to be very scarce in that a child doesn't get regular and frequent access to them. And this is, I'm not saying this to create shame around any parenting strategies that you may be engaging in, because look, we are doing the best that we can as parents with the information and the resources that we have. And there's no doubt that when you've been slammed with fear-mongering messages around kids and sugar, that you're likely going to retreat to more restrictive practices around these foods. Again, like hearing like sugar is toxic, sugar is addictive. What are we supposed to do with that information as parents? The natural response is to limit them and to make them less accessible, because we're already fed this idea and have this message seated in our brain that our kids' bodies are not capable of handling sugar, and our kids can't be trusted to eat sweets in a manner that is health-giving to them. That is the backdrop of what we're facing. There's also a lot of information out there that tells us that if our kids have too much sugar or too many sweets, this is going to put them at risk for serious health complications like diabetes. So I just want to acknowledge the overwhelm of what we might be feeling collectively as parents trying to feed kids in a culture that demonizes food and that tries to promote this message that parents need to hyper-control what their kids eat. And these messages are really causing us to lose sight of the long-term goals that we need to have when it comes to feeding kids. We're not always going to be there for them to make all their food decisions. So we can't always tell them what they can and can't eat or prevent them from eating certain foods of their choosing. So controlling their food might be a short-term solution, but it does nothing for teaching a child how to be a competent eater who can self-regulate their intake and enjoy a variety of foods. Again, this brings us back to this question, is sugar really addictive? Well, if sugar isn't something to fear, again, we have to really break through some of these myths that we're hearing in order to help you feel more relaxed and more trusting in introducing some of these foods and allowing some of these foods in your home. So I want to challenge this idea, because a person might point to a child who's eating sweets out of control and say, see, look, that child is addicted to sugar. Sugar is addictive. So I want to challenge these claims and really look at some of the scientific findings that are out there that have shown, and I'm saying that in my air quotes, that sugar is addictive. So that takes us back. I want to bring up a study that a lot of people will throw out there. Like, well, there's research studies that show that sugar is in fact addicting. And one common study that's often cited is a study that was published in 2007 that's titled Evidence for Sugar Addiction, Behavioral and Neurochemical Effects of Intermittent Excessive Sugar Intake. So these researchers set out to investigate this question as to whether or not sugar can be treated as a substance of abuse and lead to a form of addiction. And what's really interesting is that their study was actually done on rats. So this was an animal study. Based on their findings, they suggested that intermittent access to sugar can lead to behavior and neurochemical changes that resemble the effects of a substance abuse. What is interesting, if you really dig deep into the study and how the study was set up, and again, the reason I'm diving into this is because oftentimes, it's studies like this that are cited as proof of why sugar is in fact addicting. And I hear a lot of people and a lot of moms that I work with also tell me the same thing. Like, well, it would be helpful to see what research says, you know, or you might have a partner that's skeptical about letting your kids eat sweets because they've heard studies like this that have claimed that sugar is in fact addictive. And so when we can piece these studies apart and actually unpack them, it really helps us understand the reasoning behind some of these findings that are being promoted. So when we look at the context of the actual study, I will link it in the show notes if you're interested in actually reading it yourself. But what we can see from the context of this study is that the rats that were used in this experiment were actually starved and deprived of food daily for 12 hours before being exposed to a sugar solution. The fact that this small detail is overlooked is monumental. And it just goes to show you too that a lot of scientific studies out there, you have to be really careful about actually looking at the study and how it was done and how it was set up, because there's a lot of diet culture in scientific studies too, unfortunately. This study is something that is interesting to note because the rats that they used for this experiment were actually starved of all food before they exposed them to a sugar solution. So what was interesting is that the rats, when they were exposed to a sugar solution, the rats that were starved ended up taking in more of the sugar solution than the rats who were not starved. And that goes to show us actually a very important truth about sugar and the way that our brains and our bodies work. And that is that restriction is what can trigger a out of control response around sugar or sugar substances. And this is exactly what we observe in this particular study. The rats were preoccupied with sugar when it became available to them because they were actually starving. And after abstaining from sugar, the food deprived rats preferred the higher sugar food rewards even more than the rats who were not starved. So this is, again, very interesting, because we like to, and when I say we, I'm talking about the broader diet culture messages, painting this picture of sugar being addictive and we need to restrict it and we need to limit how much exposure our kids have to it. And in reality, what we see is that when sweets and sugar have been restricted and limited from a child, they are more likely to overeat them when exposure is finally made available. And I'm telling you, I see this all the time, anecdotally, in my own practice and with families that I work with, where a family, and again, doing the best they can with the information and the resources they have, may not feel comfortable having sweets in their home or sugar in their home because they're worried about the potential negative side effects on that child. But as soon as a child gets older and starts getting exposure to sweets outside of the home, they're more likely to overeat them when exposure is finally made available. And that behavior is often mischaracterized as an addiction to sugar, when in fact, the underlying issue is that there hasn't been enough exposure to sugar to begin with. I know it seems really backwards, but I just want you to try to go with me here for a second, that the answer to behaviors around sugar that seem addictive, where a child seems out of control, or is eating in an uncontrollable manner or overeating, those behaviors are more likely to happen when there is not regular access to sugar. And those are actually things that we can take away from studies that, like this one, that try to paint this picture of, well, sugar is addictive. Look what happens to these rats when we provide a sugar substance. The only reason why those rats were eating more of that sugar substance is because they had actually been starved prior to that experiment. Understanding this fact is really important to debunk this idea that sugar is addictive and that if you eat it, you're going to want to just eat more to a point of being out of control. And in reality, I've only seen that happen when there's not regular, consistent access made to sweets. There's also other research that claims that sugar is potentially addictive, or it is an addictive substance because it releases dopamine in the brain. They've done studies that have shown that certain spots in the brain will light up when sugar has been eaten, and that those same spots in the brain that light up also become active when certain drugs are ingested. So I've heard these studies also being cited as evidence of sugar being addictive, which again is interesting because the pleasure centers of the brain have shown to be activated when eating sugar. So does that mean that sugar is addictive? And this is where we have to look at how the brain and the body work, because suggesting this, that this is evidence that sugar is addictive, is an oversimplification of how our brains actually work, because there are many different things that activate the pleasure center of our brain. Things like giving someone a hug, laughing, listening to music, all of these things and various other activities will light up the same centers of our brain. So does that mean that those things are addictive too, in the same context and sense that drugs are addictive? We need to look at the bigger picture. What we actually see from more recent research, and I will make sure that I include this in the show notes as well, especially if you have a partner that's skeptical about offering sweets to your child. But more recent research has actually debunked these claims and called out some of these faulty conclusions that have made these claims of sugar being addictive with limited information. The reality is that sugar is, you know, when we talk about it from purely a biochemical point of view, it is a basic unit of energy that our body is fully capable of using. And I talk about this analogy, and I don't want to oversimplify it. But if we take something like a cookie or an apple, both of those things, when eaten, are going to break down into the most basic unit of energy, which is glucose, right? And that's not to say that a cookie and an apple are nutritionally equivalent, because they're not, and I'm not trying to make that claim. What I'm saying, though, is from a macronutrient standpoint, they are breaking down into the same essential units of energy, which is glucose. And by the time glucose hits our bloodstream, our body doesn't know if glucose has come from a cookie or from an apple. There are not superior forms of glucose or preferred forms of glucose that our body can use for energy. Our body can use it all, which is wonderful. And so to say that sugar from one food source is addictive, but sugar from other food sources is not addictive, doesn't make any sense biologically, right? Like, our bodies are capable of utilizing all these foods. What can we do with this information? Again, I think it's important to start to debunk and unpack why it's okay to move past fear that may be preventing you from making some of these foods more accessible in your home and to your children. Now, I, again, don't want to dismiss the feelings that you may have if you've observed your child eat in a manner that feels really out of control with sweets, or even if you yourself personally have had a chaotic relationship with sugar or sweets. You may feel like you're addicted to that food because you find that you can't stop eating it when you do let yourself have it, or you can't keep it in the house because, you know, you feel like you have no control around it. And that may feel like that food is addictive to you. And I don't want to dismiss that or minimize that by trying to debunk kind of the science behind sugar being addictive. What we actually see from research is that that behavior of feeling out of control with sweets and sugar has more to do with minimal access to those foods and not having regular, consistent access available. So that is the big opposite here. When something is truly addictive, like substances, like drugs or alcohol, right? One of the main modalities of healing from that is abstinence, right? Like just abstaining from that drug altogether. And oftentimes we try to apply that same strategy to something like sweets. And the reason why that doesn't work is because our body actually needs food in all different forms. And when we try to abstain from something like food, it actually only makes us more obsessive about it. We see that in various different forms, but especially with kids. When kids feel like a certain food is inaccessible, it hardwires their brain to hyper-focus on it to a point where they become obsessive about it and they are more preoccupied with it and will forego in engaging in other activities that normal kids might be interested in order to seek out that food that they're obsessive about. And so it's really the opposite. Really, if you have a child that seems highly preoccupied with sweets, they may need more access to it. It's not necessarily because they're addicted to it per se, but because they need more access to it. And next week, I hope you'll tune in. We're going to continue this mini series, and I'm going to be talking about main reasons why you may have a child that's preoccupied or obsessed with sweets and sugar. So I hope you'll come back as we continue this conversation during this month of October and in light of Halloween coming right around the corner. I, again, want to help you break some of these myths so that you can find freedom and peace around having these foods in your home and learning to enjoy them as a family. I have a blog on this particular post about sugar being addictive, as well as 5 common myths about sugar. So if you're interested in reading more about this topic, I definitely want to encourage you to check out the show notes. I'll make sure I link those posts in there. And inside those posts, I will also be hyperlinking. You'll find all the studies that I've mentioned in our show today. So I hope this is helpful. As always, I can't wait to hear your questions and your thoughts. What do you think? Let me know in the comments of the show notes if you have any questions about this. I can't wait to hear from you. All right. Thank you so much for tuning in, and we will see you next week. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Lift the Shame podcast. For more tips and guidance on your motherhood journey, come connect with me on Instagram @CrystalCargis. Until next week, Mama, I'll be cheering you on. Bye for now.